Welcome to the Combat Radio Network. This is Three Men and a Microphone, recorded inside the Iron Mike Studio, located in the Military Exchange on Route 332 in Canandaigua. Three Men and a Microphone is an opinion show based on the ins and outs, the news, politics, and scuttlebutt about town and the city of Canandaigua. Beautiful, historical Canandaigua, New York, where the hops grow higher, the grapes grow sweeter, and the sun always shines. I am your host, Corporal Tim Thornton, and this is Three Men and a Microphone.
Hoorah, Semper Fi, do or die, hold them high at 8th and I. Gunnery Sergeant Gnarly Ermey here.
The Military Exchange.
.com. What would we do without them? You better check it out. I'm not going to tell you about it. You just have to check it out for yourself. Hoorah, Semper Fi, have a great day.
What's the matter, cupcake? Winter's here and all you have to look forward to is yellow snow. That Einstein you're dating wants to know where the white goes when the snow melts. Thinking of all the fun you'll have schlepping home at 20 miles an hour? Car won't start, mud, slush, salt, traffic accidents, shoveling, brushing, and wading through a snowdrift just to check the mail? Your boots leak and you only have one glove and it's stuck? Frozen wipers, locks, fingers, toes, and noses. Hey, at Iron Mike's, the Military Exchange, we agree. Winter sucks. So let us help you bear the frozen tundra that is upstate New York. The Military Exchange has everything you'll ever need to kick the crap out of old man winter. Warm hats, caps, gloves, socks, long underwear, Polypro, thermal, wiki, and super wiki. Gore-Tex insulates, wool, jackets, parkas, pants, and boots. There's lots of fun things to do in the snow, but none of it's fun unless you gear up. At Iron Mike's, the Military Exchange in Canandaigua, New York. Stop in and see Corporal Thornton. He'll even show you how to write your name in the snow.
Great googly moogly.
Welcome to WOKR 1310, Three Men and a Microphone, and I am here today with Mike Yarger from Canandaigua 2020, and this is all the local news and scuttlebutt from Canandaigua.
Well, we like to say news and analysis.
News and analysis,
there
okay.
There we go, as opposed to scuttlebutt.
I'll handle this.
Sounds like we're dealing in rumors then.
I'll handle the scuttlebutt.
Okay, very good. So, None of My Business is one of my favorite segments.
Yeah,
what do you think, Tim?
I like None of My Business.
Yeah, and we've had a lot of businesses discussed on Canandaigua 2020 this week. Barber's Barbershop. Are you familiar with that one?
I have heard of it.
Okay. Yeah, so they set up on South Main Street, pretty much across the street from Millsy's barbershop. And there were some people who got on there and said, you know, we've been there recently, and we like the cuts we're getting there. So, you know, that's a place that you might consider, you know, taking your beard to.
Barbers are the only people that are allowed to touch your facial hair. But I have heard that not a lot of barbers really practice the art of shaping and helping you groom a beard. They'll just even it out for you.
Right.
So in the beard community, we're looking for a barber who really does, like, shape the beard like someone would shape your hair in a salon kind of thing. I don't really like using that comparison, but believe it or not, as far as I've been told, it's not out there.
Really?
I've heard there's guys that I have a card from a young man who says he does, but it's but the other bearded fellas say they haven't found anybody.
Okay.
So if you're a barber that really grooms the beard or helps you, we'd like to hear from you. Call us, 585-394-2960. As for Corporal Tim Thornton, we'll talk about beards.
Okay.
Beard on.
Trombley's Tire and Auto got a thumbs up this week from a fellow who took his vehicle in. It was a plow truck and was having problems with his truck and was afraid that he might not be able to plow the next day when they were calling for 6 inches of snow. Trombley's got him in and out within the hour. So thumbs up to Trombley's on that one. Max Philly Steaks down on South Main Street next to Canandaigua National Bank there. They're celebrating their 12th birthday. It's hard for me to believe that they've been down on South Main Street for 12 years now. But apparently they have, and they're doing a little birthday bash the whole week. So if you stop in and you order something, you can register to win some prizes and things like that. This is something they've done every year. And I got to tell you, I love their product. Those Philly cheesesteak sandwiches, so good. Somebody else was asking about where can I go in Canandaigua to a hotel, motel, whatever, and take my pet. So Super 8 got mentioned a number of times. Apparently they are very pet friendly at the Super 8. So if you need some place in the area that will accept pets, check out the Super 8. Nolan's was mentioned again. They're prepping to do their rebuild. They plan on breaking ground in the spring. I've actually seen a little bit of work going on over there, I think, in preparation for the spring rebuild. But a lot of questions still surrounding their grant. It was brought up at the city committee meeting this week because the city council has to select a individual or a company to process the grant that was given. So when a company like Nolan's receives a grant, which in their case it's about $400,000, it actually came out to about $416,000, and that $16,000 is meant for administering the grant. And what happens is when you receive a grant like this from the government has all kinds of hoops that you have to jump through and paperwork that has to be done like that, and basically that $16,000 covers a company making sure that those hoops are jumped through and that paperwork is completed, and you know, the government's happy with the fact that it's been administered properly. So Nolan seems to be on track for getting rebuilt, but also we heard this week that right behind them, the Inn on the Lake is going to be shutting down. Now, we don't have a lot of details yet on exactly what's going to happen, but it's well time for them to be shutting down. It's been said for a long time the Inn on the Lake is kind of outdated, needed remodeling, things like that. So apparently the owners have decided that they are going to close down in October of this year, and they're basically going to gut the place and rebuild it and be reopened not in 2019 but in 2020. It's going to take that long to rebuild it. The sandbar down there, a very popular destination, that also is going to be closed down. From what I understand, they're going to be working on rebuilding the walls down there on the lakefront to make those safer, in addition to redoing the hotel. At this point, I don't know if they're going to be asking for more rooms, if they're going to be going up three stories. We don't know if they're going to be asking for any taxpayer assistance in the form of a pilot agreement or anything of that nature. But we are trying to follow up on this. And from what I understand, even the owners have not seen the new plans for the new hotel yet. That actually is something that's supposed to be going on Friday. Well, they'll sit down with their architects and like that and go over the plans. So we're in the very early stages of the redevelopment of that property. But I think it's great that the owners are letting the community know ahead of time that this is what's happening, and, you know, keeping us up to date on that. So,
you know, it might be a really good thing, because if you ever go to the hotel on the lake in Geneva, it's very beautiful,
Ramada
very
down there, yep.
A lot of windows looking at the lake. I only go through there for meetings, but it's nice.
Yeah.
So, and why not go up a couple extra stories and make it, you know, be able to see the lake.
Well,
and they will have our hotel on the lake.
Right. And the other thing they mentioned was it's going to be a boutique hotel. And a lot of people are saying, well, what the heck is a boutique hotel?
It's like Florida.
Well, yeah. At this point, what boutique hotel means is that it's not going to be a flagged hotel. It's going to be not a Sheraton, not a Marriott, not something along those lines where it's part of a chain. It's just going to be an independent hotel. So typically, boutique and independent are used interchangeably.
Oh, I've heard the term boutique hotel used as the bottom floor
is full of boutiques, small businesses.
Right.
And they sell.
Right.
To
and, I think that's what some of the people are how that's how they are interpreting that. But I don't think that's a fair interpretation. I don't think that's necessarily what's in the plans. But, again, we don't know. We haven't seen the plans. So.
Right.
I wonder if they're going to be pet friendly.
Yeah, we'll find out, I guess. It would be nice because there are people who travel down to the lake and want to bring their porpoise or
if they have a porpoise.
So we had a school closure this past week, and there was quite a bit of controversy surrounding that because some of the area schools decided not to shut down. Canandaigua School System decided that they would. And, you know, that's why these superintendents, they get the big bucks. I don't want to be in a position where I have to make that call and determine whether or not the schools ought to be shut down based on the weather. They were calling for, you know, 10 inches of snow. I think we ended up with about 6 inches of snow. You know, the roads looked pretty good by 4 o'clock in the afternoon, but usually the buses are out and running around like 2 o'clock in the afternoon, so the roads were still a little dicey at that time, and I personally think that the Canandaigua City School Superintendent made the right call, but then again, I didn't hear of any problems with the schools that decided not to close, so who knows?
Well, if the weather had gotten worse,
right.
Then maybe you made a bad call.
Right.
But, you know, what I heard on 2020 was all this back and forth. Well, you know, they're making the call, and do they, you know, just how tough a call that is for the superintendent, and you wouldn't want to make that call, and I wouldn't want to make that call. Well, you know, that's a bunch of malarkey, because when you're a leader, and I would assume our superintendent is a leader and knows how to manage. That's why he's in that position. So if he makes the call, it wasn't that difficult of a call because he's the guy who's educated to make the call.
There you go.
So I don't have a problem with whether he says stay or go because that's why he's in that job.
Right.
And I wouldn't even really question him unless it got really bad at 4 in the afternoon and then you go, couldn't you predict the weather even further, you know?
Right.
But, well, you know, it's not a difficult call for someone who has all those things to look at and he makes his decisions. That's why he's paid to do it.
Right.
Not a big thing.
Okay. And speaking of making that call, right now we have somebody who's in a position of great importance here in the city of Canandaigua. Our own fire chief is back, and we'd like to get him on the air and get his segment done in case he gets called out on us again.
Well, so, I see a young fireman come in the building.
Right.
Who's much too young. Hello, sir. How are you?
Good morning, everybody. Thank you for having me.
Oh, you're
Frank Magnera, correct.
Frank Magnera.
Yes.
How old are you?
I'm 38. Yeah.
Get out of here. Yep. You look fantastic.
Thank
for your
you.
Age.
I try to stay in shape, eat right, and, you know, sometimes it really helps.
Well, if you
really
can
help,
get
but
the camera right on him, he's a good-looking fellow.
I mean,
we're talking calendar material here.
That's a good idea, Canandaigua Fireman 2018 calendar.
I don't know. Have you seen half my staff? I'm just kidding. No,
actually, shape,
you'd be surprised. Those guys are in phenomenal shape for what they do.
We have an Appalachian bearded men's calendar that actually goes out. They have not asked me to be in it, but there is one for bearded men of Appalachia.
I wish I could grow a beard. I can't have to wear the mask.
Wildland
so.
I'm a Wildland firefighter.
Okay.
So
yeah.
They have a Wildland firefighter. They have a Wildland firefighter calendar.
Parker.
Are you in it?
I should be.
For the state, are you with them? Or,
no, the federal government.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, for FEMA, what they're called.
Nice.
So we want to welcome Frank Magnera to the show.
Thank you.
You're
appreciate it.
Our new fire chief here in Canada.
I am.
Relatively new.
4 months on the job.
4 months on the job. Yep. And speaking of young, you also have some pretty young kids, don't you?
I do. I have twins. I have a boy and a girl, 13 months. A little over 13 months. So,
months
yeah.
Old twins.
Boy and a girl. That's it?
Well, that's it. We plan on more,
shot,
but
right?
We got one shot, and I think we're pretty satisfied. So.
Now, from what I understand, the city of Canandaigua recruited you from Georgetown, Kentucky.
I actually applied. I was here for, I did come from Georgetown, Kentucky.
Okay.
I was a firefighter down there for quite some time, about 9-10 years. Actually, I could back up. I started, when I was a young age, about 14, in Irondequoit. That's where I grew up. I was an explorer with the St. Paul Board Fire Department. So that's kind of where I got my bug to be a fireman.
Fellow Irondequoit boy.
Western East. Okay.
Culver Road in Brandon.
Okay. Well, Seneca in Burwell Road, that area.
Nice.
Rogers Middle School.
We actually have a lot of Irondequoit people in my life in professional business.
Nice.
It's very nice.
Yeah.
Welcome.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. So I was a St. Paul Boulevard volunteer fireman when I turned 18, leaving the Explorers program, and then went to college at MCC. I was able to get an internship with Eastman Kodak as a firefighter there for about a year. So that was a great experience. And then I just wanted to continue my education, and I heard about the Eastern Kentucky University and moved to Kentucky. And then I've been down there ever since and got my degrees and, you start to miss, every time you come back and visit family, because we still have a lot of family, wife, family, and, my family up here, and you miss the lakes, you miss the weather changes, you miss the fall, so we kind of decided to, to come back up here and raise the family and start fresh. So here we are.
Very good.
So that's
nice. Welcome back.
Well, thank you.
Right.
Thank you.
Right. So Eastman Kodak, when you were there, did you learn about a lot of the chemicals that they use there and how that impacts the fires that they might have?
I did. Actually, I was fortunate to be an intern at the time of Kodak. It was right around 1999 to 2000, right at the peak of Kodak, when everything was still in full operation. They weren't really closing anything. They weren't, shutting down buildings. So I did get to learn a lot about the processes, and actually became, 18, 19 years old, I was a hazmat technician. So it was one of the higher levels of, wow. They got to teach me all that and learned, different specialties that way. So, I was fortunate enough to get that experience at a very young age and early in my career as a firefighter. So,
okay. Now, I want to talk to you specifically about the Canandaigua Fire Department.
Okay.
Some of the challenges that we're facing. You and I were at a meeting this past Tuesday with the city committee, and they were talking about doing a study.
Yes.
Okay. And we saw a study done back, I think it was 2007.
I believe so.
We had something called the Matrix Report generated. And apparently the city was not real happy with the results of that. And not only did they not follow the recommendations, they actually pretty much went against the recommendations. So how confident are you that if we have another study done that the city's going to actually do anything that the study recommends?
Well, that's a very good question. And that's when the city manager came to me about, looking into doing a community risk assessment, because that's basically what the study is. I was all about it because I'd never done one before, not from what I've seen in former records, held by previous chiefs or, any of the city records. So with that, it's, a community risk assessment. It goes, these experts go around and see where our high hazard areas are, what resources are needed, what staff is needed. So I think it's a great idea. It's something that every fire department, should be doing already. But if this company is willing to come in and look at the big picture and help us, in that arena, that's fantastic. Now, with that is the staffing study. Like I said in the meeting the other night, I don't need a study to tell you I need more staff. That's something that I've, been pretty vocal about, whether it's career, volunteer, we all know the challenges ahead for both. But we do need qualified, competent interior firefighters. As we've seen, we've been busy. You guys seen in the papers, and you guys follow along. So, that's part of it. So hopefully, and from the feedback I heard in the meeting the other night, it sounds like they're confident that they will try to follow the study, depending on if the study comes back the way it's supposed to. If it's, because they kept saying the Matrix study was flawed,
right.
Or they're picking apart other studies that they had over the years, again, if it's, from my research into the company that's doing this, it's an independent company. They're former fire chiefs, firefighters, lots of years experience between them. I would be pretty confident to take the recommendation just from looking at some previous studies that they've done. So hopefully they can, help us and start planning for the future.
All right. So this study is going to cost about $50,000, and the cost of this study is split between the city and the town.
Correct.
So actually this study is going to cover the fire needs for both the city and the town.
Yes.
Is that correct?
They're going to look at the Cheshire Fire District and look at their need, see, you know, because you can just drive around and see new development, new growth. You know, people are starting to sprawl out into the town more. There's development, near the airport in this area coming up, from what I understand. Especially the airport itself is supposed to, start to get bigger and more and busier. So it's going to take both districts, the whole town, city together, and look at, you know, resources, staffing, you know, where the risk is, and maybe we need to build a fire station somewhere else. Maybe we need to put career firefighters down Cheshire, or, you know, again, that's all hypothetical, and it all depends on what the study comes back. And, you know, I'm the only problem is I'm impatient. I want to know now.
Well,
I think a lot of the
community,
you know,
is impatient, because I think they see that we're not being properly staffed, mm-hmm. and that it does create a risk for our community.
Yeah.
Has it been said how many full-timers you have?
I have 9 full-time firefighters. I have 2 on duty. I have 1 at each station. So I have 1 firefighter here at the Northside station here in the town, and then 1 at Station 1.
How many volunteers?
Right now, I have 7, 5 of which are active interior firefighters, which actually can go in the fire. Yeah, 7 total. Actually, 4 that can go inside. 3 have to stay outside. They're exterior only. So we're trying to raise those numbers, and we're actively recruiting. If you go to the Fire and Ice Festival this weekend, we're going to have some of our volunteers out there soliciting and trying to get some recruitment. I plan on having some upcoming open houses to come and do some general, you know, informational sessions just to kind of get interest. I started a city Facebook page to try to get some information out that way, you know. So really trying to get the word out. But again, you know, like if you saw the news last night, or what I believe it was NBC or one of the affiliates did the shortage of volunteers in Brockport.
Right.
So there was
a fire yesterday, and actually it wasn't a structure fire; it was car fire.
Car fire, correct?
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And there were actually 2 vehicles that were on fire, and this happened in Brockport. And apparently, it took 40 minutes for the firemen to be able to respond to this fire,
mm-hmm.
because it's all volunteers out there, and they were in the process of going from home to work or whatever. Mm-hmm. Those roads weren't in great shape. They get this call. They've got to turn their vehicles around, take whatever time it takes to get back to the fire station or get back to the scene. And, you know, if we have fires here in Canandaigua that take 40 minutes to get to, we're going to start losing mm-hmm. big portions of our city. So,
and that's one of the things, you know, that we can take credit, you know, is that our response time is phenomenal.
Yeah.
We can get out the door quickly.
Right.
And, you know, a case in point was actually our mutual aid run to Cheshire's fire a few weeks back. We were the second engine on scene. So, I mean, that was quite the distance on the hamlet of Cheshire.
And,
so,
and Cheshire was,
you know,
2 doors down from the fire.
Exactly.
2 doors down,
and,
something
and,
like
you know,
that. So they were right
and I give, you know, there's nothing against the volunteers. I mean, that is, you know, being a volunteer in this day and age is very, very difficult. With the training restrictions, you have to have X amount of training to be qualified to go in. Just the commitment that's needed, you know, nowadays is it's hard. I tried when I first moved back here to join a volunteer department. I joined Webster for about a second, but just the commitment that I had with a young family, a job that took me everywhere when I was working for Avangrid, you know, going across the whole New York State or up the Northeast, you know, it's tough. So
right.
I understand even some of the volunteers that I have, it's, you know, we have to tailor training programs around their work schedule or their family schedule because, you know, let's face it, family comes first, you know, and then, you know, your job, obviously you need a livelihood. And then third has to, you know, the volunteer, be a volunteer firefighter. So we have to take that into account and try to figure out a way to make that all work, you know, and not stress everybody out or, you know, extend them so thin that they get burnt out or not want to do it anymore, you know.
If you volunteer, do you have to commit to a certain amount of hours?
They have to make their mandatory drills. And there's a certain number of, you know, like have to have mandatory respiratory training and hazardous material training, stuff like that. And, you know, right now I've been going by what previous chiefs have put in place for their requirements, and it's just show up for a couple drills a month. It's pretty lax in that department. There's no, some departments you say you have to make 10 calls a month or you have to come to every single drill. That was a commitment that I had to do in the department I was trying to join, was every Monday night I had to go to drills because I was a new guy. You know, even though I've been 20-year firefighter, I had to go back, which I understand. I don't know their district. I don't know their equipment. I don't know their capabilities. You know, so, you know, it'd be the same thing here. If, you know, I recruit a volunteer that, you know, has, you know, 20 minutes or 20 years on the job. You know, I still have to treat him like a new guy because he doesn't know downtown Canandaigua. He doesn't know the trucks we have, the equipment, the manpower. You know, so a lot of that has to, you know, it's a bigger picture than just going on and say, oh, hey, come join us, you know, and pull this hose, because it's not like that anymore. Yeah. You know, there's go ahead. I'm sorry.
I want to say something. The your line of thinking with the volunteers and considering their work schedules and their family, but yet getting that quality of training, mm-hmm. that's exactly the path you need to go down to get more volunteers, to get more interaction out of them, and more loyalty. You're dead on in your approach, and I know that from basically interviewing people off record. So I'm glad to hear that. That was my big thing today. I wanted to hear you say that approach to volunteers is what you're doing.
We have to tailor, you know, and it's just the demand is too great, you know, and, you know, with that, you know, is, you know, if I could get the career staff back, you know, that's more people that I could do one-on-one, you know, with them. So if, you know, they can't come to drill night, but they're here at the station, you know, they may, you know, four guys are on duty. They could help train, you know, or, you know, but again, that's not up to me. That's up to the council and everybody else to determine how we operate, you know. So, you know, ultimately, you know, we're trying to pull everything out of our hat, you know, and get what we can do to make Canandaigua feel safer, make my firefighters safer on the fire ground, because that's priority, you know. So,
is there anything that anybody can do to help you more, like? You know, like, is the city, an admin, the people that live here, anything we can do?
Just, you know, pass the word around if they're interested in becoming a volunteer firefighter. I mean, that's, you know, obviously, come see me. My door is always open. If you see that little white SUV up front, come on in, you know, get an application, ask questions. They can call. They can, you know, send a Facebook message on the city site. Or even just pop in. If I'm not there, that's one of the on-duty guys, you know. So, you know, it really is. It's just, you know, it's a waiting game, you know, to see how we're going to react to the, you know, the need. And, you know, right now we need staff, so we're, you know, we'll see. We'll see what happens here.
That's great. Anything else, Mike?
Okay. So you said you're tailoring the training. Now, my understanding is you're not only doing it for Canandaigua guys, you're also trying to get the training for the Hopewell guys and the Cheshire guys and trying to combine the training with the different...
Moving forward, there's been a lack of mutual aid training. So that's kind of where what they were discussing, that regional... right now... We have what's called the mutual aid box plan. So if we get a fire here, we go to what's called a second alarm. We bring in Farmington. We bring in Cheshire. We bring in Crystal Beach. And if it gets bigger, then that's when Hopewell and, you know, other departments come around. We haven't done any real regional training. We train a lot with Crystal Beach. We did some wastewater rescue training not too long ago, and it was, you know, fantastic. So... You know, we need to open it up to work with, you know, other departments other than the VA that we work on a regular basis, you know, just to, because take a look at downtown Canandaigua. You know, most fire departments, you know, coming in, like, take, you know, Bristol doesn't have a downtown like that. So those guys aren't versed in firefighting and, you know, that ordinary, what's called an ordinary frame construction building, right. You know, and it's cut up, chopped up, rebuilt, you know, for hundreds of years, you know, so it's one of those things that we got to get these folks exposed to that. You know, it's the same with us going up to them. You know, we might not, you know, have the experience, you know, with some
with
of
barns
the...
With
some of their, you know, their hazards out there, you
right.
know, so
right.
It's a two-way street. So
yeah.
I'm trying to build relationships back up and hopefully get with that, you know, so.
Okay. Nice. So another question I had was, we're talking about volunteers, and I looked at the volunteer form or whatever, and it looks like the only thing you can volunteer to do is to be a firefighter. Couldn't you split that up so that you've got jobs like a person directing traffic, and a volunteer only responsible for doing that, not having to be trained to do interior and exterior and all those kind
of
things?
That is an excellent question, Mike. There is actually three functions you could join. You could join to be an interior firefighter, go inside with us and fight the fire. That's the need right now. That's, you know, that's what we really need to get, you know, be sufficient and efficient on the fire ground. Then there's an exterior firefighter, which sets up scene support operations, lights, ladders, changes our air cylinders on our back, stuff like that. And then there's fire police. So, you know, say you're retired and you don't want to, you know, do any of the heavy lifting type deal, but, you know, you put on an orange vest and, you know, you could direct traffic. So there's a need for all three of those functions. Right now, the interior is priority, but again, we'll take any of that, you know, or even, you know, if, you know, that goes to the females too. I mean, that's something that, you know, I've had a few women come up to me and wanted to, you know, ask. It's like, yeah, absolutely. It's please join.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, yeah.
It doesn't, you know, it doesn't have to be a fireman.
And
you
you've actually had firewomen on.
We have in the past, correct.
So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's good. Mm-hmm.
Is there like a booster club for the fire department? Someone to help out with the community and things?
No,
fundraisers?
Our host companies, the Arenas and the Murals, typically handle that. The Arenas are really stepping forward to try to really boost that. But there's no like ladies auxiliary. Before, from my understanding, some of the guys' wives used to come help cook or stuff like that. But that kind of went on the wayside, and maybe we could bring that back. But yeah, I mean, that just comes with membership, you know, nine families can't really, you know, support that, you know,
True.
So, but yeah, I mean, that's something moving forward that, you know, I welcome any, you know, community help and, you know.
I used to direct traffic on a five-way intersection.
Okay.
Used to.
What does that mean? And now I'm obsolete? You think traffic and intersection have changed?
Well,
anyways,
Chief, I want to thank you very much for being
here.
It's been great having you here.
Thank you.
And I hope we can get you back here again someday.
Sure.
Hopefully after you've gotten a few more people working under you.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, if you spread the word, we need help. So,
what's the goal? Volunteer goal, how many people?
As many as, you know, and that's, you know, obviously the more the merrier, and because, you know, even like some of the departments that have these 100-person roster, you're really only getting maybe 10 people coming to calls, you know, so, you know, obviously if we get the larger pool, we can, you know, because right now I got a couple guys, like this last call, I had one volunteer show up, so it's great, that's more than most during the day, you know, so,
yeah.
But yeah, actually, the more the merrier. I mean, we'll open up the roster to, you know, as many as we can take.
Great. How do people get a hold of you?
They can go to multiple places. The city's website. I have a page on there dedicated to fire department. It's kind of under construction because there's been a lot of questions about fire inspection in the fire marshal's office. So I'm trying to revamp that to get that out there. But there is a number on there, my direct office number, and then my email and the station numbers. You can go to Facebook, City of Canandaigua Fire has a page,
or if you're downtown on Saturday, you'll see the guys.
If you'll see downtown, look for the red truck,
the
and they'll be out there soliciting from, I think, 11 to 2 or 3, so.
Great. Thank you, sir.
Hey, thank you.
Chief Magnara.
Nice meeting you guys. And
pleasure having you on the show.
Okay, good seeing you.
Thanks.
Nice meeting you.
Chief, before you go. Welcome back to Three Men and a Microphone, and this is WOKR 1310. I'm Corporal Tim Thornton, and I'm here with Mike Yarger from Canandaigua 2020, and... Now I can't read your name. I had it from Scotty.
Scotty Bean.
Scotty Bean?
Bean, yep.
Bean, and you're from?
From Maine.
Maine. And you're with the 5th chapter?
5th chapter, yep.
And I assume you're also a Vietnam vet?
Yes, I am.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Scotty, tell us about the 5th chapter, yourself, and, you know, anything. We'd like to hear about your, you know, being a vet, too.
Boy, how much time do I have, you know?
5 minutes.
5 minutes. 5 minutes.
Holy shit. Now, the 5th chapter, we're a clean and cleanest over motorcycle club. It's been around for 37 plus years. Started in 1984. four. Oh, as hell, it was sooner than that. It was in the late 70s out in Manhattan Beach, California. A lot of guys that were just, you know, like myself, it had best, you know, got clean and sober, you know, in and out of jail, trouble all the time, but still liked to ride motorcycles, but just didn't like that other lifestyle. So this motorcycle club got started. It's been around Rochester for, I believe, 1986 or so. You know, at one time it was actually a worldwide organization. There were over 3,400 people. But over time, and there was a misunderstanding with another club. I won't mention who that was, but it's online if anybody wants to find out about it. But it's a way of sort of like being back in the service with the camaraderie of, you know, your squad or your shipmates or whatever you want to call them, and it's a hell of a good support group for sobriety also. You know, a lot of people think, they're a bunch of pussies, you know, but most of us are all just like everybody else. It's just, you know, get sick and tired of being sick and tired and always in trouble, and, you know, and always looking over your shoulder, you know, and then finally you get clean and sober and you realize, hell, I can have even more fun. And the thing is, it's real. It's not imagined, you know. We do a lot for the, for different community stuff. You know, myself, I support the vets at the Canandaigua VA. There's three or four other guys in the club that are steady members down there. And, you know, we provide a lot of the literature that for the 12-step recovery program. And because, you know, being a government foundation, they can't necessarily buy the literature, you know, without being politically correct or whatever you want to call it. So a lot of our functions, we take part of the money and buy the books and the literature for the vets in recovery there. So
now, cool. Are you a 12-step program?
Yes.
Okay. All right. And you said your motorcycle club. So I know a lot of the motorcycle clubs, they do these runs.
Oh, yeah.
Like poker runs, things, yep, like that. You guys do that kind of stuff?
We don't usually do like poker run type things. You know, we'll go and support anybody other club. We're a neutral club.
Okay.
It means that we don't really, you know, support any one club in particular.
Right.
You know, we recognize that, you know, most of the, like the 1% clubs, they realize we're not there to take over any kind of territory or, you know, take over any of their business. You know, that's not what we're about.
Okay.
You know? What we do is like spaghetti dinners. We do a huge barbecue in August and with live music and tons of food. You know, our thing is like, if you're not going to have any booze there, you better have a lot of good food. You know,
that makes sense.
Yeah, you know, and you know, I don't care who it is. You know, if you come in and the food's good and there's plenty of it and all you can eat, then everybody feels
good. And there's good entertainment.
Good entertainment. Yeah. You know, it's just a really, really good time with no hassles. You know, because you get people full, hell, they want to go take a nap. You know.
And you have an event coming up.
We have a spaghetti dinner at, that's coming up at the Moose Club in Palmyra on Route 31, just outside of Palmyra on the east side. And that is March 31st from 3:30 until 7. And this is not your, you know, I always put on Facebook, I said, this is better than your grandmother's recipe. You know, we don't do a, you know, just stuff out of the jar and throw it out there and hope we'll, you know, make some money at it. That's not what we're about. It's like I said, if, you know, you put out bad food one time and there goes your reputation.
Exactly.
You know? And everybody knows when the Fifth Chapter does something, it's top notch, you know.
Scotty, do you have a lot of, or a few vets in the group too?
We have a couple. Trying to think offhand, you know. I'm the oldest one in there at 68. And, yeah, we've got a couple. But, you know, on the whole, it's, you know, that's another reason we do the thing at the VA recovery, you know, so guys can realize there's a lot of fun out there once you quit drinking and drugging, you know. And we've had a few approach, you know. And like I said, one or two came in. But a lot of the guys in recovery here in Candego, you know, they're from other parts of the country. So, but, you know, we're not about, you know, going out and getting as many people as we can, that kind of thing. It's like, you know, first off, you've got to commit to a program in the first place of recovery, you know, whether it be, you know, as long as it's a 12-step type of a program, that's all, you know. And then you hang around for a period of time, and then we've got a one-year prospect process. You know, we're a three-piece motorcycle club, so there's kind of a format for that. You know, it's not just anybody comes in and puts a vest on. You got to earn it. You know, it's just,
what's a three-piece?
Top rocker, bottom rocker, and central piece with the MC cube on the back.
That is what you guys are.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. So it earns a little bit of respect from some of the other clubs. You know, that they know that we go through the same process that they do. You know, it's not about, like I said, it's not about, you know, you don't buy your way in. You don't you're not a good guy for a couple of months and here's your patch. You know, you earn it, just like in the service. You know, when you earn your stripes, you earn your patches. You know,
nice. That's good. Well, how do people get a hold of you in case they want to join or talk to you?
We have a website. It's 5th Chapter MC, Rochester Chapter. There's a Finger Lakes Chapter also that's like a sister chapter to us. In fact, they were guys with our club that broke off and started another one. Our charter was getting up to the point of where, you know, pretty much something had to happen, and so they left and started another one, which is, it's all good, you know. It just, it's increases. We've also got one in the Southern Tier and one in Cape Cod, and they've been around since probably back since when the 5th Chapter first started years ago, back in the 70s, you know.
So. Very good. 5th Chapter, how do you get the name?
It's out of the big book of the 12-step recovery program.
That's cool.
It's called the 5th Chapter, the chapter to the agnostic. So it's that's kind of... Yeah, exactly. You
that's
know, it's kind of self-explanatory, yeah. But it doesn't mean, you know, we're against any sort of organized religion or anything like that. You know, it's all about spiritual. It's not a church religion type thing. It's I'm kind of at a loss for words.
Well, it's like a separation of, you know, your group and you're not saying that you're a church organization.
No.
You sound, I don't know, you kind of remind me of myself and my dad, and we always say we're not a sinner or a saint. You know, we're somewhere in between. And we may have been one or the other at one time, but we're not anymore. So, you know, you pick your friends differently now because not really good enough to run with the saints,
mm-hmm.
you know, and mm-hmm. I'm not bad enough anymore to run with the sinners. So, you know, there you are.
Absolutely.
Right somewhere in the middle.
Absolutely, yeah.
Well, thanks very much.
It's about just trying to do the next right thing, you know. And
there you go.
Trying to help people in recovery, so.
Scotty, thanks for being on the show.
You're more than welcome.
Scotty Bean from the 5th Chapter.
You're more than welcome. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
So.
Scotty, nice meeting you.
Nice to meet you, too, man. Nice to meet you, too.
You can hang around if you want.
I'll see you.
You will, too. All right?
Yep.
Now I got to go over to VA and pay my med bill.
Oh.
All right, guys. Take care.
All right,
thank you, sir.
Safe.
Okay. So, Mike, we're back to your segment. Kind of in, kind of out.
Right.
You know.
Well, this is going real well. You know Jack Schopenhauer?
Don't I? Lawyer?
Yeah. Lawyer, judge. He was a city court judge. All-around great guy.
Landlord?
Landlord as well, yeah.
All right.
Now, he has a new title, and his new title is Mr. Canandaigua. He was actually named Mr. Canandaigua by the Chamber of Commerce.
Is he a bodybuilder?
Oh, nice.
No, he's not a bodybuilder. He's just, you know, building up the community. That's what he's all about.
Really?
Yeah. And so the Chamber of Commerce every year recognizes somebody, not necessarily a man, could be a Mrs. Canandaigua, could be a Miss Canandaigua. Okay, and it has been in the past. But this year, it was Jack Schopenhauer's turn to be honored, and named Mr. Candego. So we salute him and congratulate him on that honor.
That's good. Congratulations.
Yep. Now, we were talking about the Fire and Ice Festival. That's coming up this weekend. It's a city bid. Business Improvement District is putting this thing on, along with the Candego Merchants Association. That's occurring today, Saturday, from 11 o'clock in the morning till 4 o'clock in the afternoon. As we heard from the chief, we're going to have the firemen down there. So that's part of the Fire and Ice Festival. You're going to have a guy who breathes fire down there. You're going to have ice sculpting. So all kinds of activities for families. And, you know, like we said, there's a lot of the merchants down there are doing special promotions this weekend.
I like that. The guy that breathes fire, and I picture the chief running over with a fire extinguisher.
Well,
we're not going to have any of that.
Oh, you know what? There was actually a discussion about that because somebody is going to be doing like campfire starting type of thing. And when it was being discussed, Denise was saying bonfire. And then the chief was there, and his eyebrow kind of went up, and Denise was, oh, I didn't mean bonfire. I mean campfire.
Bonfire really means, you know, pallets of wood.
Right. This is just like a demonstration on how to start campfires. So, moving on, I don't know if you heard that the Great Lakes Kraut is scheduled to close next year. That's over in Shortsville. A lot of people in Shortsville are going to miss that, particularly the smell. We hear complaints every year on Candego 2020 about this odor that emanates around the Shortsville area. And every year it's the same thing. It's a harvesting of the kraut. It gets fermented over there, and sometimes the gases escape. And, you know, people in the community are more or less used to it, but you always get new people moving into communities who may not have been forewarned.
So now we'll lose
of what these things are.
Right. 40 jobs.
So this Great Lakes Kraut, they're actually one of the largest producers, or I guess they are the largest producer in the United States of sauerkraut. And, you know, Phelps has the Sauerkraut Festival here every year. We have massive amounts of cabbage that are grown by farmers in this area. I think it was something like 180,000 tons of cabbage are processed here in Shortsville. But they're planning on closing next year. They have another plant up in Wisconsin, and apparently their plan is to expand that plant to make up for the difference. But I doubt very much that they're going to be taking the cabbage from here and shipping it to Wisconsin. So I don't know what the kraut farmers are planning on doing, and we'll try to follow up with that and see if there's another market for them. We also got a report that Mary and Robert Ross of Parrington are missing. They're a couple. Robert apparently was recently diagnosed with brain cancer. He was scheduled to go to a doctor's appointment that he did not show up for. Mary and Robert are both believed to be together. They drive a white Kia with a license plate that says Blustery. So if you spot a white Kia with a license plate saying Blustery, please give the police a call or call 911 and let them know. They've been missing since about the end of January, so we're talking like 8-9 days now that nobody's heard from them. So we're hoping that they're found safe and sound and, you know, nothing terrible has occurred to them. So we have much more time?
I have no idea. I can't tell with two interviews in the middle.
I'll give you another segment here, and you know, we could cut this one off if you want. I don't know if you read the story about the Ithaca High School that was putting on the production of Notre Dame.
No.
Oh, like a Rudy thing, or?
Okay, so down in Ithaca, they have a high school that decided that their high school was going to put on production of Notre Dame. Now, Hunchback of Notre Dame. Now, if you've ever read the book and not just seen the Disney movie, you know that the part of Esmeralda is played by Romani. And a Romani is basically a gypsy, okay? They're European gypsies, okay? So one of the actresses in the production thought that she would automatically get the part because she was of color. But the part ended up going to a white girl. And so this sparked a protest. And actually, the Ithaca High School decided that they would not put on this production of The Hunchback of Notre Dame because of these protests that were springing up around it. And, you know, the protesters are quoting Martin Luther King and things like that. But, you know, when I read Martin Luther King, I heard that he said that people ought to be judged not by the color of skin, but by their character. And apparently that's not what they want to do here. They want to say, well, this is a part that's written for a black person, even though it's not. And, you know, there ought to be a black person put in that role regardless of how well they act.
Well, the Olympians for the Winter Olympics, they're having that same problem.
Right.
Where the person who got picked to, I don't even know what they're doing, running with the flag or the torch or something, but it's white female who does the luge instead of the black Olympian.
Right.
And the black Olympian says it's, you know,
racism.
Racist.
And actually, the decision was made by the flip of a coin. They flipped the coin to determine which one would actually carry the flag, and that's how that was decided. So I don't know how you determine that the flip of a coin is racist.
So Ithaca canceled the play
because of the controversy. The person who was protesting was saying, and it's not just a single person. She's got a bunch of friends. So there's something like 22 students or whatever that are, you know, in agreement that this should not have occurred. So what they're looking for is to put on a different production that's more inclusive and has more parts for more people, you know, possibly has multiple leads. So apparently that's what the Ithaca School District's looking to do.
Well, you know, speaking of someone who is of color, I would say Ithaca made the right decision, and we should just cancel the Olympics until we can be more inclusive. That's what seems to be the thought process.
And speaking of Olympics, did you hear about Morgan Shield?
No.
She's one of the skiers here from Bristol, and in her freestyle event, she took third place. Now, this is like the qualifiers. It's not the final rounds. So, you know, she did qualify to make the final round. So we're anxious to see, you know, how much did she hold back in the qualifiers so that she'll be able to show us in the finals. So we're going for the gold.
Is this the girl? Well, probably not. The one that they pictured in the Super Bowl? By the way, you and I are the only ones that picked the right team to win.
Actually, you did out of it hate. Wasn't me. I picked a Patriot.
I did because I knew my dad was going to leave me in the hole.
I didn't pick the right team, but I was very close to the score.
I said 37.
Off, right. I was way off on the score. I was way off on which team. But the part that I was correct on was I said that the Patriots would be playing catch-up during the entire game, which they were. But I predicted that the Patriots would actually pull it out at the end, which they did not.
See, now, you rebutted me on the previous show about defense. You said, well, they're both a good defensive team.
Correct.
But
you turned out to be more accurate than I was. It was a run-and-gun offensive game.
Well, but the Eagles' defense is what kept Brady off his game. I mean, it was amazing how many times they got involved in, you know, stopping a good play.
Right.
So, besides, he just wasn't hitting his best guy at the beginning. I mean, I'm not really a big football analyst, but it was a great game. I enjoyed watching it.
Yeah, it was exciting right up to the end.
Second year in a row. There was just a fantastic Super Bowl. Now, they played the national anthem, but I was still on the road. So I don't even know. Did they show the players during the national anthem?
They certainly did.
Anybody take a knee?
I didn't see anybody take a knee. Not only that, I don't know if you know the story of Pink. Pink was the one who sang the national anthem, and she was recovering from the flu.
Right.
So just before she sang, she took a cough drop out of her mouth and tossed it aside. And, you know, a lot of people focused on that. I focused on her voice. She has an amazing voice. And,
it's beautiful.
You know, Pink is not somebody that I'm a big fan of. I really don't listen to her music that much. But guess what? I'm going to start listening to more of it because I was really impressed.
You know, in the Justin Timberlake thing, you know, during the Super Bowl, I believe that if you're a little younger and you even knew any of those songs, which I didn't, and if the microphone had actually been on where you could hear it through the TV, it probably was a pretty good, what do they call it?
Halftime show.
But the mic was off, or it was something wrong. You couldn't get the impact of his voice. And other than that, all that coordination with the band and the crowd and the little boy that took the Snapchat
selfie, perfect.
You know, it was fine. What else you could do? Everybody else kept saying, typing in her, should have been Led Zeppelin, it should have been some rock band. But you know the problem is? When a rock band plays, they pretty much play standing up, still banging away on the instrument. It really doesn't make the greatest halftime show because there's really not that movement, that involvement. And that's why I think they do go to that side of the music because it's more involved.
Yeah, well, I think it's come down to a generational thing. You got the older people who like to see the classic rock performers, and you got the younger people who like to have the Justin Timberlakes and like that, and I think, you know, you reach a point where you're not going to make everybody happy. I think if Elton John were the performer there, everybody would be happy. But again, that's just my opinion. Maybe the younger generation feels differently.
Right, and how much moving around is he going to do? If
exactly.
He's got that piano on his back.
Right.
Well, very good. That was our show, and we want to thank everybody for listening to WOKR 1310, Three Men and a Mic, and Civil War Radio. We had the boys from Scope on, and Don Smith did a great job once again. We had the Chief.
Fire Chief in, Frank Magnera.
Frank McNamara.
Magnera.
They had some amazing names, and obviously Chief was a great guy. It was easy to see that and like him. And then we had Beansy from the Fifth Chapter, and he was a great guy, Vietnam vet. So we want to thank all our guests, and we want to thank all our co-hosts, Peter Parker. Melissa Walker, whatever.
But mostly, we want to thank our listeners.
That's right,
for tuning in every week and turning us on. Without you, we wouldn't be on the air.
That's right. Without you and our sponsors, we wouldn't be on the air. So, hope you have a great weekend, and we'll see you for Valentine's Day next.
On Wednesday. We're going to record.
Wednesday. It's both Valentine's Day and my wedding anniversary.
Oh, really?
I don't have a Valentine's Day again.
How many years?
Or date.
Introducing now, in the corner of Case's Many Storage Plaza, wearing camouflage boxers and smoking a cigar, hailing from Canandaigua, New York, Corporal Tim Thornton's, the all-new The Military Exchange. The Military Exchange is proud to present over 5,000 feet of pure 100% military. The Military Exchange is your source for all your military needs and proudly supports active reserve and former military, VFWs, legions, and leagues, Boy Scouts, Sea Cadets, Civil Air Patrol, and your family. Presenting cigars fresh from our plantation of the Dominica, collectibles, t-shirts, hoodies, and ball caps, rank and insignia uniforms for parade, security, and law enforcement, camouflage clothing, outerwear, wool pants, parkas, and field jackets, camping backpacks, tents, and sleep systems, vintage clothing and gear, Class A's, past and present, tactical and survival gear, antiques and airsoft, brand new and pre-enjoyed military camouflage and boots. Check out our military talk show at IronMikesMX.com. 5,000 feet to pure 100% military in Canandaigua, New York.
Tune in every Saturday morning, 8 to 10 a.m., for three men and a microphone and a lady. Hear all about local news, politics, fishing report, and sports, as well as all the talk about town and the scuttlebutt in the city. To keep up on the show, stay connected and visit us on Facebook at Canandaigua 1310, Three Men and a Microphone, presented each week. Saturday, 8 to 10 a.m. and Sunday afternoons at 2 p.m. Sponsored by the Military Exchange in Canandaigua, New York. And to catch up on past episodes, go to IronMikesMX.com or WOKR 1310.